Welcome back to Beyond the Headline, everyone. I'm so excited to have you on the show today because we're here with the co-founder and CEO of Flip, Susanna Vila. Thank you so much for being here, Susanna.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'd love to start out with an introduction to Flip and your team's work changing the housing industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So Flip is a platform, and we connect people who want to either sublet or get out of their lease on an apartment or a house with people who are looking for a flexible stay. So basically, you can use our platform to do that in three simple steps. One, you get pre-qualified, connecting your social accounts, your bank accounts to make sure you can kind of prove that you are a good renter. You can think of this as a passport for rental housing. And then step number two, you apply to a space, put down a deposit, and sign a sublease agreement once you're accepted. And then you get approval from the landlord to move out and move into that space, and everybody can move in and out freely and with landlord approval.
It's almost crazy to hear you talk about how easy it is.
Yeah, I know. Well, the first question I always get from people when I describe Flip is, wait, but isn't this illegal? Which is, on the one hand, frustrating for me to always get the same question, but on the other hand, it's an opportunity for us because as we get bigger and bigger, more people realize that, oh, wow, this is something I can do. And that a whole new range of opportunities opens up for them. And that's really cool to see.
And you and I are just talking about it, too. There's a lot of exciting reasons to sublease your place, but then there's also a lot of serious reasons when you don't want to have to deal with going through 100 hoops to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the people, we kind of separate the kinds of people and the reasons that they use Flip into a few different categories. One we think of is basically like our romantics. So what are our romantics doing? Well, they're falling in love and they can't live separately for another 6 months. They have to move in right away. But maybe they want to hold on to their own space, you know, just in case it doesn't work out. Or they're breaking up and they can't live in the same place for another day. They have to be separate as soon as possible, right? And then there's the go-getters, the people who are largely in their 20s and going after building a career, going after new jobs. They get an amazing gig on the other side of the country or on the other side of town, and they have to go after it. And why shouldn't they? They should. And they should be able to do that without, like you said, a bunch of different steps to go through. And yeah, that's often why people come to us.
I love the way you described it too as a type of passport, because when you think about the future of housing, it's a lot different than it is today. What types of internal conversations is your team having of paving that future?
Yeah, when we think about the future of housing, there are two big trends that we think a lot and talk a lot about. The first is cities. So 3/4 of the world by 2050 is going to live in a city. It's a lot of people. The second is professional independence. Now almost half people in this country work independently. And I really think, and we think, that the idea of kind of this linear career path, this corner office as the ultimate goal, is going away completely. So that flexibility and that location independence is going to create a bigger and a bigger demand for more flexible housing, right? So for housing that fits with the way people are living. And housing hasn't yet adapted, but we think housing will very much adapt. People will need the ability to go in and out of leases, not just on entire houses, entire apartments, but on rooms, because a lot of people are going to be living in shared spaces. So this needs to happen safely, needs to happen affordably, needs to happen easily. And that passport is something that it's basically all about trust. It's something we've started creating for people so that this can happen, so that people can go in and out of leases without thinking about it. And also so that owners can minimize some of the risk inherent in people going in and out of their units without them knowing about it. So when somebody's always qualified, that risk of either having a sudden vacancy or having someone who you don't know live in your unit, it goes away.
One of the coolest parts about the first part of that answer, too, is as we move into more of a distributed workforce, you could take a year and sublease 3 different places in 3 different countries.
Well, that's, I mean, maybe I was weird, but that's how I lived most of my 20s. And that's how I think a lot of people will live. And, you know, it's not just something that's crazy in my head. We've seen this in other with other kinds of pursuits in the world in the past couple of years. I don't know if you heard of, like, Remote Year, for example. There's a bunch of initiatives like this that are saying, I understand that people don't want to live, you know, wedded to one office in one city for 3 years. They want to live in a bunch of different places, try out a bunch of different experiences. Let's create the infrastructure, right, so that they can do that. So there are other companies that are creating that infrastructure for the career itself. I think probably Upwork is the biggest one. And we think of ourselves as a company that's creating that infrastructure in terms of housing.
Do you ever think that you could partner with companies who have a distributed workforce to help people work in different places?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely in our game plan.
When you think about the tech powering Flip and the things that you are doing and want to do, what do you think are the biggest ways technology can influence this?
Yeah, so the way we think about how we're building our technology is we're doing it in a series of phases. So the first thing we had to build was the marketplace tools. A way for supply to match with demand, somebody to post space that they don't want, you know, for a little while or they don't want it all anymore, and somebody to find that space, message them and say, you know, here I am, can I have it? And then they connect. The second step of the technology we're building is all about trust. That's what I mean when I talk about the passport for every renter. It's a layer of trust that is, you know, lives everywhere within our platform that every renter carries with her. And it shows not just the really obvious metrics like her credit score and her income, but also her history as a renter. How many sublets has she had in the past 3 years? Did anybody complain about her? Did she always pay the rent on time? What about her other bills, her utility bills? Does she pay those on time? And everything you do that makes you look like a good renter shows up on that profile, and it becomes easier and easier for you to get into a space. That's hard to build. That's something we've just started working on. It'll take a while.
I think it's really important that you mentioned that earlier, too, about the owners, because I've never thought of it from that perspective. I've always thought about it from me wanting to sublease something, and it's a lot of risk for them.
Oh, yeah. So when I started Flip, the person who I think of as kind of like the godfather of the company is this guy named Zach Ahrens, who comes from the real estate development world. And he used to tell me that for an owner, one of the most petrifying things is that you could have a 3-bedroom unit where 3 25-year-olds are living in it. And within a year's time, the 3 25-year-olds who you let move in are no longer there, and there are 3 other 25-year-olds in there. And you don't know anything about them. Because it's all happening under the radar, right, in the shadows. And that's petrifying for an owner. And if I owned a big building, I'd be very scared of that because you don't know what could happen and you're liable. We're trying to remove a lot of that risk by simply kind of just taking that market out of the shadows and putting some light on it by making it very easy for the renters, for those 25-year-olds in that 3-bedroom apartment to get connected to this layer of trust and to say, I'm a good renter, actually. I'm coming in now. I'll be here for 6 months. That's all I need. And then I'm gone. But to some degree, I'm accountable.
On both ends of the spectrum, both for renters and for owners, what is the most eye-opening conversation you've had with each of them?
Yeah, so I've had a lot, probably more so with the renters. Probably the most surprising conversations that we've had with renters are ones that have shed light on just how hard and kind of painful this experience is for them. So people will come to us and say, I'm being asked to pay 3 months rent. You know, I can't do this. What am I supposed to do? Is this legal? How am I going to pay this rent? Like, I have to leave in 30 days. I don't know what to do. Like, really stressed out people. And we knew, you know, the beginning of when this was just an idea, that this was a pain point for people. But I don't think we ever knew the degree to which, A, people weren't educated about what their rights were and what they could and could not do, and B, how much money people were being asked to pay if they ever were in a situation where, you know, they had signed a lease but they had to leave.
The education aspect is so critical because there's nothing worse than either staying somewhere or doing something you didn't have to do and then later being like, why didn't anyone tell me?
Yeah, no, and that's, again, it's like that frustrating slash opportunity experience that I live every day, which is like whenever I talk about Flip with somebody, invariably somebody will say to me, oh, I could have used that 3 months ago, or my best friend could have used that 3 months ago, right? Like you just said it to me before we started chatting. I hear it all the time, and it's frustrating, but also hopefully in the future I won't hear it as much.
That's so true. I didn't realize everyone either has had the experience or knows someone who is going through the experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys find that you get a lot of referrals then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so from the beginning, we expected that search would be a big source of user acquisition for us. One of the most exciting times this past year was when we became the first result for Flip nationally on Google. Yeah, it was like, because Flip's a pretty common word. We were like, yeah, that'll happen, but not for a while. And now it's not just that, but also like we're high up in Sublet's New York and Flip Elise, obviously, first result. That's amazing for us because now I can just say to anybody, oh, just Google it. You'll find us right away. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that happening now.
That's a really cool moment.
Yeah.
When you reflect on those conversations and all the learnings that you've had since you guys launched, what are some of the major things that have changed or evolved?
So when we started out, we were focused on helping people. You know, everyone says start out with one tiny niche, your beachhead, that customer, just focus on them. And we were focused on people who needed to get out of their lease on an entire apartment. And we were in New York. So like I said, there's a lot of people coming to us saying, listen, I just got this job relocation, or I'm having a baby, or I'm getting divorced. I have a one bedroom in Brooklyn Heights. I have all this money on the line. Please help me. We were like, yeah, you're our customer. We are totally going to help you. That is what we are for. What we didn't realize was two things. We had no idea that people would be just as willing to sublet their apartment in order to move on rather than go through the more onerous process of assigning the lease to somebody else. And because this was an easier process to deal with on average, we ended up just doubling down on that. I'm starting to encourage everybody to sublet. And then we also had no idea that roommates would care about our product at all, shares. Mm. So the core part really of our value proposition, as I've probably already like hammered in the last 10 minutes, is this qualification that, right, everybody is trusted. And we that qualification is something that we do using the same tools as major landlords. So we didn't think that room sharers would care about those tools. We didn't think they'd care about income verification, credit scores, but and like official lease documents, like official sign up created by a third party sublease agreements just for a room. But it turns out they did, and now at least half of all of our inventory is a share.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important observation in the sense of being able to successfully balance going with your plan and what you think the hypothesis is, but also being able to adapt quickly. What have you learned about balancing planning and serendipity?
The hardest thing for us has been doing what we thought we kind of had to do as a really scrappy early stage startup and what everybody else was telling us to do. So from the beginning, we knew we had to get a lot of users. We had to get them however we possibly could. And we were being asked, especially during like fundraising conversations very early on, how are you going to get those users? Please make a plan for it. It has to be scalable user acquisition channels, just something that people were saying to me over and over again. So I probably spent, and we probably spent, and now we look back and we realize this mistake, too much time thinking about what are all our user acquisition channels going to be? How are we going to get users in a scalable way? That was wrong. What happened, I guess you could say, it was through serendipity early on, was that we noticed that it actually the best users we were getting, the users that were using us in the way we felt like where we could add the most value, were coming from word of mouth. And so we spent too long trying to build as many channels for getting users as we could, instead of just doubling down on that one word of mouth way of getting users. And once we started doing that, we realized, forget the marketing plan. This isn't marketing. Like, just forget it. Stop thinking about the future. Focus on now. Then we started to grow more than we could have imagined. So, you know, that was something that took us too long to learn. But once we realized that was what we had to do, it was the right choice.
I love that story. And literally, as you said that, my mouth opened wide because I realized that I've been doing the exact same thing that you just said. But it's so important because sometimes you have that thing that works really well, but you cling on to other things because you thought they were going to work. And it's such a misused dedication of time. I don't want to say waste, but it's like you could be doing so much more.
Yeah. And it's really hard, I think, when you're just really trying to get as many people as possible to find out about what you're doing. Another thing early on, advisors said to me, don't hire anybody to do marketing. Don't spend any time or money on user acquisition. And that's like an extremely counterintuitive thing for a founder in the first 6 months of starting a company, or really just bringing an idea to fruition, to hear, right? If I can't do that, then what do I do? The whole point is I have to get users. And so when they said that to me, I mean, to be clear, they were saying that until you have product market fit, don't do it. And when they said that to me, I didn't know what I should do, right? So that's kind of what led us to make that mistake of saying this advice doesn't really work for us. We have to spend time and resources on user acquisition. And then we had that kind of come to Jesus moment. Oh no, we shouldn't be spending any time or resources. We should just focus on word of mouth until we understand what it is that we're building better.
What are some of your favorite stories from your first year?
Definitely, I was saying this a little bit to you before. It's these moments when I go somewhere completely random, completely non-professionally oriented, and I say to somebody what I do, and they give me an answer back that is just so shocking that my jaw completely drops. The other day, I was at an art gallery with some friends of mine, and I was talking to someone who was like a few years younger than me probably, and she was like, what do you do? And I said, oh, you know, I'm founder of this company, this is what we do. And her answer literally to me back was, oh yeah, flipping leases, all my friends do that, because we're all from Australia, so renting in New York is harder for us, so yeah, we all do that. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, cool. In my head, I was like, I'm freaking out. And there's been a couple stories like that. And it's just like, I basically every time that happens, I have to leave the room and go text like a million people.
It's so hard to play cool because you really just want to hug the person.
Yeah, but then, you know, but then they'll find out your secret, right?
Which experience are you most grateful for in terms of you learned a lot from it?
I'd probably go back in time to before I started this company. I was able to do a lot of the things that we try and help our users now to do. A lot of traveling, a lot of like going after new jobs and opportunities. And I think largely that was because I spent the time and kind of had the wherewithal to deal with the pain of the housing and the leasing that allowed me to do that. So I did some crazy things. Like I kind of up and moved to Cairo, Egypt, when there was like the uprising happening there.
Oh my God.
And I had to sublet my apartment in order to do so. I did it because my job at the time said, I want to send you there to do research and interview people, you know, we'll pay for everything. And you'll live there for a while. I was like, yeah, of course. I had to sublet my apartment in order to do so. And it was kind of a pain, but it was totally worth it. And then a few years later, I had an opportunity to fly to Peru, also for a work thing. When I was there, I fell in love with it, and I started a nonprofit before starting Flip. And my co-founders at the time were like, "You have to actually live here. You like it, and it'll be really good for the whole organization if you move to Peru." And I am so grateful not only that they told me that I should do that forcefully and that I did it, but that I was able to do it, right? Again, housing, leasing, I had to sublet my apartment. I had to find a series of sublets in Peru all through word of mouth / Craigslist. I'm happy that I was able to do all those things, because they gave me like this host of new learning experiences that I definitely, I wouldn't have had it any other way.
What was your time in Cairo like? What are some of the most interesting stories that you heard, especially during a time when so much was happening?
Well, there was this, it's odd. You think of a place that's really far away, and you probably think of it one way, but then you get there and you realize that, like, it's kind of like in every city, there's this little bastion of, like, technology, like, kind of, like, hip technology people, all with the same kind of way of thinking. And there's definitely, I was kind of surprised that there was that crew of people living in Cairo that were all really, just really, like, tech forward and kind of exactly the same as me and my friends there. And it was so easy to access them, you know. It was like, once you get there, they're these people who are showing up on CNN and have like 37 million Twitter followers, and they're just like chilling on the roof somewhere with their computer talking to you about what's happening. And it was just like, there's a learning opportunity at every corner.
Very cool. And I'm really glad that you mentioned some of your experiences moving around, because I'd love to learn more about those adventures. What do you think your wildest subletting adventure was?
I have this theory that for every startup, there's a Seinfeld episode that encapsulates it. And literally, I think for every startup, you could find one. So for Flip, the one that I always think of is there's this episode where Jerry finds out that there's a extra apartment in the building where he lives, and he's so excited. He tells Elaine about it, and then it becomes this valuable kind of trade, this currency that's passed around among their friends, this knowledge of this available unit that's in New York, and nobody knows about it but them. And every time I've found a amazing place to live, an amazing sublet somewhere, it has been not through some codified system or some great platform, but through some weird word of mouth thing. So I ended up living in the former like art studio of a old woman on the right on the ocean, overlooking the water, in like the best part of Lima, Peru.
Oh my God.
I only found out about it because a friend had connected me to a friend of his who was moving there and suggested that we get coffee. And I said, yeah, let's totally get coffee. I'm looking at a room later, so I can't do it until 9 p.m. And she said, oh, I just went and saw one through a friend of a friend, but it was too small for me. Maybe you're interested and maybe you want to go take it. So then I go and I sit down with this woman, this like 90-year-old woman. I speak to her for 2 hours. She shows me the space. She's like, I need to like know it's like somebody that I can trust going in here. And it was probably the best place I've ever lived. And it was absurdly cheap. So it's that kind of serendipity and like connection to connection way of finding out about something of value that has always worked really well for me and been the most exciting thing for me, and something that I'm trying to facilitate with a platform.
I think it's really important that you say that, and it goes right along the lines of what you were explaining. If there's a learning in every corner, and I think you have to put yourself into those situations, whether you know it's moving somewhere or trying something new, to find it, or you never get to discover it.
Yeah. It's amazing how fear of losing a security deposit will stop a lot of people from doing that.
Being on the move has required you to only keep the things that matter most. And I'm super interested in this because I'm a mega hoarder.
Yeah,
I have stuff from like 8th grade and I'm trying to get rid of it. I just can't. What do you carry with you during every move? And how does that mindset influence you?
The mindset is more important than the things that I carry with me or one carries with them. I think it's hard because what you want in a place that you're living is more and more, I think, a place that we live it's a way to identify ourselves. It's part of our identity. You know, the things that we choose to put on the wall or the bed we choose or the furniture we choose, it helps us to express ourselves. And yet we shouldn't have to have a million things in order to do that. So when thinking about what furniture I'm going to put in my apartment or what furniture I'm going to only have so that I can move a few times a year or however much, it's really about what is the best expression of me, of my, like, my aesthetic sense and what I care about. What do I look at when I wake up in the morning that makes me really happy? And that's what the people who go around talking about, like, minimalism and the minimalism movement say also. It's like, it's not about getting rid of everything. It's about keeping only the things that make you really happy.
That's such a true statement. And just listening to you, I was thinking all of the stuff that I've hoarded, like if I was to pick up and move tomorrow, I would take my dog and go. I wouldn't take
really?
My jacket from 8th grade.
Just your dog? No, I would not take your jacket from 8th grade. You absolutely would not do that.
I think I'm the only person who still has that kind of stuff. How do you feel like that mentality also influences you as a founder, Susanna? Has it been helpful?
Yeah, we have this thing that we call like our move the needle gut check, which is before we do anything, we ask ourselves, does it move the needle for the company right now? And a lot of things don't. And it really allows us to just say, you know, maybe we'll do that one day, but we're not going to do it now because we are at a point where we have to only do things that are going to make a big impact.
Another good one for me. Lots of ahas today. Two more questions for you before we go. The first one, whether at Flip or before, what's the most unique or counterintuitive advice you've ever received?
So I'd probably have to go back to something I already mentioned, which is that at the beginning of Flip, everybody said to us, you know, don't spend any time, don't spend any money on user acquisition, don't hire a marketing person, don't do marketing. It was extremely counterintuitive at the time, but it ended up being, and I didn't follow it, to be clear, but it ended up being right, and I wish I had followed it.
That's a good one, too. There's so many times when you hear something, especially when you're first starting out, they're like, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's like, what, I have to? And then just if I could go back in time, they were right.
Yeah, it's like story of my life.
Yeah.
Last one. You wrote a great post around the election about everyone choosing one thing to make the world better. And I thought it was really timely because we've been so inundated with so many things happening. And sometimes you get so caught up in everything that's happening that you don't actually end up doing anything about it. What's your one thing?
Yeah. To be clear, when I wrote that, I wasn't thinking like to make the world better in general. What I really was thinking was like, what is one thing we can do to hold this new and, in my opinion, extremely terrifying new presidential administration accountable? Because me and everybody else, we're all really busy. We're working on professional pursuits, personal pursuits. And, you know, we're not going to be able to all become full-time organizers. But this is important. And we have to at least pay attention. And the way to pay attention, I think, or the easier way to make sure you are, is to focus on one thing, one issue that you think is the most important. And don't just read that casually, read about it casually, but look at it carefully and find the journalists who are doing the best job of covering it. Find the activists that are working on it, the policymakers. Pay attention. And then when they ask you to do some little thing, like make a phone call, do it. So I, you know, after I wrote that, I had to obviously have an answer to the question. And I thought about it a lot. And I focused on something that I historically have not really known a lot about, but that I, in fact, do think is the most terrifying and pressing issue to face us right now, which is just clean energy and climate change. So that's just something that I'm in my spare time trying to read a lot about and learn more about so that if somebody asks me to make a call or show up somewhere, I can do it.
I love the philosophy, and I love in the post, too, how you're saying that you want people to hold you accountable to. And I think it's great to do that kind of stuff with others.
Yeah. It's exactly. And it's really actually cool that people in my life who are It really, I think, is a silver lining. People who are who have not been politically active up until this point, people who have been incredibly unengaged are now showing up and talking about, we have to do something about this. And it could, in fact, change this generation, I think.
Let us all hope
that But it is terrifying. I'm terrified.
I am also terrified before we all have to sublease to a different country. So let's focus Flip's organizational pursuits right now on right here. I'm so grateful that we got to have you on the show, Susanna. Thank you so much for sharing all these stories with us. What's the best way for everyone listening in to stay up to date with you and also stay up to date with all the work the team's doing?
Definitely follow us on Twitter. We're Flip Your Lease. And go. I would love it if anybody listening to this podcast would go out, go try the platform, log in, play around. Everything is relatively new, so tell us what you think. You can send an email to support@flip.lease and we will all get it right away and probably respond right away, if not in a few minutes.
That is a good promise. Awesome. Thank you so much.